Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a new administration in Washington, D.C. I saw the fireworks with my own eyes on the television the other night, Don Mohler. But we get our own fireworks here in this state, certainly with the COVID and the situation with the city. I know we've had Mayor Brandon Scott on this week, and you wanted to get down to Annapolis to get on all things COVID, Annapolis, Kerwin, and all of that. And we have one of our defending champions back and an educator. And I'll let you do the honors here, Don Mohler.
Well, it is always a pleasure to welcome back the president of the Maryland State Senate, Senator Bill Ferguson. I know you know the job was going to be tough, but I mean, we had you on right as COVID was beginning, and little did we know that a year later we would be in worse shape than ever regarding COVID. And we'll get into all things COVID and trying to run the state. But welcome back, Senator Ferguson. It's great to have you.
Well, thank you, Don and Nestor. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Today is the first day. My wife convinced me that, you know, the new year started on January 21st. So I'm feeling like we've gotten past the inauguration on Wednesday, and now it is a new day. We're going to have some direction. We're going to have some leadership, and we're going to have some strategy to fight this virus and turn 2021 into the year of rebuilding and recovery.
I feel like I shed a pound an hour on Wednesday right around noon. You know,
I just
went all night long.
Once the new door code switched over, I was breathing easier.
It was remarkable, was it not, Mr. President? Nestor and I were texting back and forth. I was texting with my friends. I actually got a phone call from a college friend in Michigan. He was one of the generals that had actually signed the letter rejecting the president's leadership a month or so ago. The collective sigh in the nation was remarkable. And before we get in, and I know we have limited time, before we get into all of the state issues, take us over the last few weeks from the Ferguson family. You have young kids, and I'm really amazed at what parents had to do over the past few weeks as they explain an attack on our Capitol, a president not admitting that he lost an election. Walk us through, not only as an elected leader, one of the most powerful people in the state, but as a dad.
It's been hard. It's been really tough. I mean, I've struggled for words. My wife and I both, we talk about it regularly. On the 6th, when everything happened, when the certification, the storming of the Capitol, the insurrection, sort of the domestic terrorism that happened, it was a struggle. How do you tell your children that we live in a great country, that we live in a place where there are values of freedom and liberty and justice for all, when our fellow Americans stormed the seat of democracy? This confluence, this paradox is just so difficult. But we were honest with them. And we said, look, this is the challenge ahead. And the beauty of humanity is that we have ways to change. We are not set in stone. And so things, every morning that we wake up and take a breath, we have the opportunity to change the future. And so, you know, things can be really, really, really dark, the darkest we can imagine, but dawn can come. And I think we've started to take the steps towards that. We have a lot of work to do. It is not over, right? I think the divisions are real. We have got to start talking again and finding ways to bridge these disparate groups who just have stopped talking with one another and have resorted to talking about and around one another.
You know, it's so interesting. And evidently, I didn't watch it, but I've been reading news reports of the out-and-out attacks on President Biden and his family last night on Fox News. And it goes to what you said about how it's not going to be easy. And I thought that was one of the most interesting aspects of the president's speech, was that I don't think he said it was going to be easy as well. I think he said we needed to do it, but it was going to be hard. But I thought, To come right out of the gate with vicious attacks that President Biden, you know, Laura Ingraham and others, is already hell-bent on destroying the country. I thought, it's hard to move forward from that. Is it not, Mr. President?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge that we have is the incentives in the political system at the moment are built around division. If you're the loudest, if you're the angriest, if you're the most outrageous, that's who gets covered. That is a fundamental problem. I think you add in social media and misinformation that can spread faster, you know, than the truth puts on its pants or whatever. The lie can go around the world.
Well, Bill, I don't know that the civics teachers can keep up with the lies. I mean, I'm here with two civics teachers, right? Like, you know, you speak when I hear historians and the Meachums and the, you know, I hear Doris come on and talk about history. I just think it's lost on anybody that's watching that part of the world at any point, right?
So at the end of the day, words matter, but actions matter more. And so what I think is going to be essential is that the words that are spoken are only received because people are feeling scared and angry and worried about their future. If that didn't exist, people wouldn't be paying attention to these words. So that is the task ahead. We have to solve problems. We have got to get through this virus. We've got to get people outdoors again, being able to interact and engage and see their family and participate in what we know of as life. And I think that we're in this really difficult moment, you know, this culmination that on January 6th, it is all a product of the external things that are happening that are very real problems. And so we have to respond with action, and that action has to hold people accountable and solve problems. That is the fundamental way we get through this.
Well, you know, it's so interesting that you mentioned solve problems. It's impossible to talk with you at this particular point in history and not acknowledge the passing of one of the true greats in the history of Maryland and actually in the history of this nation, and that is your predecessor, former Senate President Mike Miller. The outpouring and reflections regarding the former president have really, I think, touched the hearts of people across the state. And you worked closely with the former president. I know he was a mentor. Give us your personal reflections and maybe a story that humanizes him that our listeners haven't heard about.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many stories. It's hard to know when you're living through history, but to serve with somebody that served the state of Maryland and its people for 50 years in the General Assembly, either in the House or the Senate, and 33 years, the longest serving Senate president in the history of the United States, you know, that is something that's truly remarkable. And I appreciate it more and more each day. To serve in this role for 33 years is unfathomable to me, because the pressures, the interests, the competing values that are on every given day, these conflict of interests, it is very different than I imagined from the outside. And so it has given me ever more an appreciation for just what a statesman and public servant President Emeritus Miller was. He is somebody that found a way to navigate very, very choppy waters. And ultimately, if you look back at the fundamentals, move the state in the right direction. And, you know, I will say it because I think it really matters. When we had lots of conversations near the end. I mean, our relationship really changed over this last year. He really became a true deep mentor and a sounding board for everything. And I would ask him frequently, what's your favorite, what's your best accomplishment? What do you feel like you're most proud of? And how do you want to be remembered? And he was so genuine. And I think it's the most telling feature of how he made it happen. His true belief was he wanted to be remembered that when he left and was no longer here, that the Senate was better off because he had been there. And that was his genuine sentiment on all the issues, all the people, all the conflicts. If we were better off because of his leadership than we were when he got there, he would have lived a life of fulfillment. And I think he did it. That is it. I mean, he did everything he wanted to do. And I think that's the honest truth of statement about the dash between birth and death. You know, it represents everything. And for Mike Miller, he was somebody that cared so passionately and deeply about this state and about the Senate of Maryland, and he left it a better place.
We have Senate President Bill Ferguson joining us here from a very, very busy slate in Annapolis. And You know, we had Brandon Scott on this week, and I know, I was going to drop a line in about, you know, used to solve problems like getting snow out of your classroom, and look at what it led to, right? From the beginning of our conversation, but we had been trying to get Dante Barksdale on from Safe Streets for about a year and a half since we really began this, and as I move closer to the fire of things that are happening here in Baltimore, understanding his work is more than just what James Bond would tell me over at Living Classrooms. The city and the issues in the city as it relates to the state and as it relates to COVID and businesses being shut down and the decisions that Brandon's had to make that have been very unpopular. Talk about the darkness and the light here over the last 60 days, let's say, and where we're going the next 90 days, as the most important thing we get going here is, to your point, these shots, right? Like, if we get this wrong, everything else is going to be wrong.
Yeah, I think first let me just very briefly mention something about Mr. Barksdale. You know, he grew up and was born and raised in Cherry Hill, a neighborhood that I've represented for the last 11 years now. And my entry into Cherry Hill actually started through Maryland Law and the Safe Streets program before I was elected, before I really had any public service relationship. Safe Streets and my experience in Maryland Law, it's how I entered. And the work that Safe Streets has done to create a less violence in Cherry Hill has been unbelievable. Now, Dante didn't work in the Cherry Hill Safe Streets program. He was in East Baltimore, but he was the spokesperson. He was the face. He was the validator. He was the person that was the proof in the pudding of how you can interrupt violence in a successful way. It was devastating to hear that he had passed. I mean, just truly, truly devastating, and was murdered in a violent way. And it's a symbol of just how dangerous and hard this work really is. People are hurting. People are angry. People are scared. And, you know, we have to celebrate how Mr. Barksdale really turned his life around and became a model. That is what we have to see replicated over and over and over and over again. It's hard work, but that is the job. In this context, it's not very often where there is a bright shining light about what is the most important issue. Right now in the state of Maryland, there is one issue that matters above all the rest. You care about education, you care about small businesses, you care about restaurants. All of it hinges on whether or not our state vaccination program is effective. That's it. It is the entire ballgame. And there's only one place where there is direction that can get us through this effectively. That's the Maryland Department of Health. They are the quarterback for this effort. And there is nothing more in the world that I want to see than them be the most successful vaccinators in the country, if not the globe. And there's no reason we can't be. We have Hopkins. We have Maryland. We have MedStar. We have university systems with public health, Bloomberg Public Health. This is in our wheelhouse. We should be a beacon for the world. We're not there right now.
But there's nothing to like in this too, right? There's nothing else in humanity we've done in our lifetime that is getting every single citizen done as quickly as possible. We talk about voting. We all vote, right? This is along those lines, but it's a system that's never been set up before. Never Absolutely. Really been conceptually set up, right?
It is. Complicated. It is a logistics nightmare. It is an enormous challenge. But this is the time when leaders lead, right? These are the moments where people stand up, focus on the priorities, and get it done. And that's what we need right now. We need clear direction, clear strategy, clear alignment. We can't be passing the buck. There can't be finger pointing. People have to own where they have made mistakes. And it's okay because this is hard and people are going to make mistakes. But we've got to own it. Fix it, move forward. And so that's our approach. We are here to partner, but we can't continue at the pace that we're at right now.
Mr. President, where has this, you're right, no more important topic. Without pointing fingers, because some are pointing fingers at the governor, some clearly were pointing him to the previous presidential administration. Where is the?
I love how you said previous.
You've been down there. You're trying to peel back this onion. You and the speaker, and we spoke with the speaker. You're committed to making it better. What's been the hold? What do we need to do to get shots in people's arms? What's been the roadblock from your perspective? Now that you dig into this,
two issues. Issue number one is very much a federal issue. It's just the sheer supply, the question of supply. Do we have enough vaccines? Do we have them coming to the places where they're needed, in the places where they're getting them out the fastest? So that is an enormous challenge, and it is a fixable challenge to give a predictable supply chain. I think with the Biden administration, we will see that. I think we'll see the Defense Procurement Act being utilized. We'll start to see some ramped up production, and we'll have some more predictability. So that one, I think we're going to see with the Biden transition, now in a transition to administration, we'll start to see some changes on the supply end. The second most important thing is clarity from the state. People need to have certainty about when they're getting their vaccine and where they can get it. Right now, the biggest challenge I see is that because the state has not asserted its role in the way that I think is most appropriate, every county and every hospital system is approaching the vaccine in a very different way. Different forms, different signups, different times of administration. You know, sometimes CVS at Walgreens, maybe a Giant or maybe a Walmart. We need certainty at a time like never before. And we need singular portals, but we need to answer the core question. When can a person get the vaccine and where can they get it? And how can that be promoted across the board in an equitable way so that people really have confidence in this program?
Well, Mr. President, I'm going to go back into the Wayback Machine here and put my assistant superintendent of schools hat on, because some folks have clearly said to me, well, what are things that you think could happen? And I said, well, in terms of, because you say it's all connected and you're so right, and getting kids back to school, I said, I can't think of anything much easier, and I'm always fearful of oversimplifying, than getting shots in teachers' and administrators' arms. And what I meant by that was, let's take a county that I know quite well, and again, County Executive Ushefsky's being recognized as doing a terrific job. They're on top of things. They're getting the vaccine out as quickly as they can. But let's take the school system, has 172 schools. I said, we know exactly how many teachers are at every school. We have a school nurse at every school. I said, within days, if not weeks, we should be able to coordinate a delivery of vaccine to each school. Each school principal then would schedule their teachers throughout the day. If we needed assistance, we have many nurses that live in the communities that I'm sure would come in as PTA moms and help deliver the shots. And within 2 or 3 days, every single teacher using that model, if we have the vaccine in the state of Maryland, can be vaccinated. Seems to me that's the kind of precision thinking that we need. And I'm wondering if you're seeing that kind of an attempt to break it down.
So there are some complicating factors with these particular vaccines that make it difficult for multiple sites. Because of the temperature of the vaccines and the storage of negative 60 degree, there is this very real logistics challenge of vaccination sites having the sufficient equipment to store the vaccines in the time before they are actually delivered. So that is a very real problem. There have been some creative solutions where they use this dry ice box that they ship it in. What I think is even easier than that is every jurisdiction, or put it by a number, every 100,000 people, there's a mass vaccination site. So in every place in Maryland, you say, we have 6.2 million people in Maryland. For every 100,000, you put a mass vaccination site within the proximity of that 100,000 people. You have one website that says exactly who can go in, where they can register, they can go through. The fact is, every jurisdiction is being left to build its own system. So the state keeps saying that they've distributed all their vaccines. The reality is the state never touches a vaccine. Right now, the state has handled zero vaccines because all the state does is put an address into an online form. The vaccine goes from the manufacturer of the vaccine, the pharmaceutical company, directly to the vaccination site. So the state never touched it. They're always going to have 100% distribution because they just say where to ship it. What we need is the state stepping in and saying, these mass vaccination sites where you can pull up, get shot in the arm, and go, well, no, this is the day you come. You know, we're going to give you 3 text message reminders. We're going to make sure that you get there. But this is exactly where you go. And for the next 4 months, that site, everyone can say, oh, that's the vaccination site. What I worry about,
and
right,
that's going to look like a stadium, right? I mean, that's going to look like
some, the stadium's yeah. a great example. Convention Center, Port Covington just recently opened up a site, which is fine. But you think about the city of Baltimore; it's not very easy to get to Port Covington on mass transit, and so you know, I think there were a lot of factors that probably could have gone into thinking about the best site. You know, we did a voting center at Camden Yards. I think Camden Yards is a great spot to go. You got the light rail, you've got buses, you got 95, you got 895. Everything leads to Camden Yards. But, you know, fine. We have one. We also have 16 other little mini sites. And so people are doing these vaccine shopping. They're calling 16 different places to say, hey, can I get a vaccine there? Can I get one there? Which means there's no centralized database. There's no coordination. That's what's got to change in the next 30 to 60 days. There's got to be.
Who's driving the change for that, Bill? I mean, like, how does that change? How do we say, we've never done this before. We're on the wrong highway. Let's get over here on a different highway.
There really is only one person in the state of Maryland, and that is the Secretary of the Department of Health. Right now, the Secretary of the Department of Health is in an acting capacity. That individual is up for Senate confirmation this session. It's somebody that I've gotten along very well with interpersonally. But this past week, we put forward that we are going to run a weekly vaccine stat program where every week we're going to ask the secretary, before we can confirm him, to come in with a set of objective data about how many vaccines have been distributed, how many are left, how many have been wasted, how many are coming, is it going out equitably? And we're going to have just straight numbers. It's not personal. It's not political. It's holding the system accountable. Because we can't move forward with confirming somebody that is the leader until we see improvement in this.
It always comes back to the same old, doesn't it, Mr. President? It's data, 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 tracking that data and then knowing what to do with it. I know we're short on time. You've been very, very gracious in what's a crazy schedule. A couple of quick updates for us, and then hopefully we can have you back on during this session to talk to our listeners and let them know what's happening. Give us an update on the vetoes and where we are and how you see that playing out.
Yep, on the big ones. I mean, look, we're gonna end up overriding the vast majority of the governor's vetoes. When we left in March, the world was extremely uncertain. When the governor made the decision in May to veto, I think it ended up being 37 bills. There were parts, even though I disagreed with it, I could understand. The world looked like it was sort of falling apart. We were all stuck in our homes. There was no certainty anywhere. We have a lot more information, and it has been rough and hard and challenging, but we do see the end at the light at the end of the tunnel. And so we have a lot better information to make decisions about the long-term future. Things like the Blueprint for Maryland's Future, the Kerwin Commission report. We need a plan for education over the next 10 years, more today than we have ever needed it.
I knew you were going to bring that up before Don and I did, so I would just let you go.
But look, we have 100,000 kids of the 900,000 kids in the state of Maryland, at least 100,000, who have not had a regular experience in their educational lives for the last year. 100,000 kids have not had a regular education experience, even with the virtual. These are kids that have not very regularly checked in. They're not doing virtual. This is a societal calamity if we don't have urgency. The blueprint lays out a 10-year plan. You've got to move forward with it. And we have the finances and the funding to do it. We know that for the next 5 years, we have the blueprint fully funded. We have to make some adjustments to account for some of the new things that have arisen over the last year. But that's why we're in session. Every 9 months, we come back to fix things along the way. And that's what we'll do here.
Oh, trust me, when I get the governor on, if I get the governor on, I will be.
Come on, Kiefer.
This is your chance to be the education governor, right?
I mean, I've made the same case. If he's interested about legacy and getting out of this pandemic, what we know is that on the other side of this pandemic, we've got an unbelievable amount of work to do. And in almost nothing is important to the long term as our educational opportunities for young people. And the systems have been devastated. We have got to have a plan that really gives kids the ability to catch up and then participate in a world-class system.
Well, Mr. President, before we let you run, when you're the co-host of the show, you do get certain points of privilege. I get to bring up my pet peeve. You've heard me talk about it before. Nestor knows what it is.
We just talked about Kerwin.
That's another one. But the difficulty of voting across the nation, and not so much in Maryland, but let's make it easier in Maryland.
Yes.
From where I sit, I can tell you what's on my wish list. More drop boxes, mailing ballots during every election with no questions asked to every voter in the state of Maryland, so we don't have to go through this two-tier process again, and codifying the issue that local boards of elections can count votes as they come in, as opposed to waiting. This time they needed a waiver. I call those things voting rights acts in Maryland. Any hope or any interest in those issues in the legislature?
We'll be moving forward with a number of those. I would say if you look, and I want to give the state and local boards of elections some real credit here. The primary, of course, there were some hiccups. It was the first time anything had ever happened. If you look back at Maryland's general election this year, it was probably one of the best elections we've had. We had record turnout across the board. We had clarity of purpose. We had clarity of function. Votes were counted effectively. There were minor hiccups here and there. But
as a citizen, I felt like it went the right way, right?
Yes.
Like I give it high marks as a citizen. I think Don does too, because we voted by mail and that's what we want.
And so that is something that we are going to take the lessons that we learned from the primary and the general and really put into law for the long term, things that make it easier to vote. It is fundamental. It is core to our democracy. It is the social contract. And so we've got to make it as easy as possible.
You poor politicians, man. We talk about all the stuff that goes wrong and problems and solutions. And all that. Then you actually do something right. Nobody gets to crow about it.
It really did go well. Couldn't agree with you more about the great work that the State Board of Elections and local Board of Elections did. I think we were a model for the nation. Nestor, if we want to have the president back on, we got to make sure we adhere to his staff. We know
see you, Bill. We'll get
meeting.
Mask off, beer, burgers, fries, things, kids, parks. We'll do all of that, all right?
Stay safe, wear your mask, get vaccinated.
Appreciate you, Senator President.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you.
There he goes. Bill Ferguson, our Senate President. He's down in Annapolis masking up and getting ready to fight the Kerwin fight and try to make the state better, get us all shots, all the things we just talked about. Don, we're covering some ground around here, are we not?
I tell you what, it's been a good day, a good week. We're talking to some great folks. A little later today, we'll be talking with Ron Cassie. He's got a great article in this month's Baltimore Magazine on Little Italy, talking about your friends at a meat cheese.
Hey, Master. By the way, I read up on that. It was great to see Scott get quoted in that way and talk about diversity and talk about the neighborhood, talk about people like me coming over and getting the meatballs and that sloppiness sandwich that I've kind of put together. You know, I had your lad on this week. I don't, you know, how much time you're spending with Jeff lately, but I spent about 38 minutes talking about real estate and the Ravens offense with him and talking about buying and selling homes. So Moeller and Gary Realty, you can find Jeff out in the Baltimore Positive Audio Vault, as well as our chat with Mayor Brandon Scott. All the work we did with all the Baltimore County executives last week, as well as incredible New York Times photographer Doug Mills joining us to talk all things presidents. And we also did an impeachapalooza last week as well, which will probably be relevant next week as we impeachapalooza the palooza. And I love how you have now coined 4 years of hell as, and I love this about your PR skill. Here's when you PR things up, the previous administration.
You like the sound of that, didn't you?
You know, I would let you call it the PA, but there's a certain baseball owner that owned the PGA before that. But the PA, the previous administration, you like that?
Had a nice ring to it.
I think we've coined that here with Senate President Bill Ferguson. On behalf of Baltimore Positive and former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller and our friends at State Fair El Guapo, I got to get over for some chicken and waffles this week at State Fair. And, of course, our friends at Fadley's, where I even got my wife eating steak fish. I had her Googling it. We were frying it in a pan. We're doing up the delicious bronzini over there. I'm going to get some oysters to bring those home as well. Our friends at Fadley's, they deliver those crab cakes anywhere in the world. They're coming to Catonsville, and they're always there curbside for you at Lexington Market. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.